Welcome to episode 375 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther. And this is a show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. And we missed a week, Josh.
We did. And, you know, normally in July, I would think, not that big of a deal. It's not like very much news is going to build up in a week. Boy, was I wrong. Holy cow.
Yeah.
So I guess just to get right on with this, two things that we have to say. There are stories here that happen in the Microsoft space that we cut or just didn't even put into the notes because there's so much to talk about. And I know I promised a big discussion on, you know, where I think Microsoft Entertainment devices and ecosystem and all that stuff is going.
Oh yeah, that got cut. That was last week.
It was in last week's episode. Didn't you all hear it and love it? No, there's no room for that this week. So we're going to cover that next week. And because there's probably actually not going to be as much news next week, hopefully.
Yeah.
You would think. Not sure. I guess it's a good problem to have. Anyway, we're going to start the show off the way we start off every show, with a little bit of listener feedback. This is actually a message that we got emailed to us for the last episode we did from Tim in Florida. He had a bunch of questions for us on Android TV stuff. We didn't have the answers yet. I've spent a lot more time with my NVIDIA Shield and James Montemagno, the guy that was on the show talking about Android TV, also listened to us ask these questions, and he sent me in a bunch of answers to these. So I'm going to go through his answers and supplement a little bit of extra information that I've found too, and hopefully get everything cleared up for Tim.
And as an added bonus, he's in our live chat room, so he'll probably even correct you as you're going through.
Right. And by he, you mean James Montemagno.
Yes, indeed.
Correct.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started. So I will reread the questions that we already listed out last time we had a show. The first one is regarding subscriptions via apps. Tim says, since so many things are being included at the platform level, from the live TV interface, can you subscribe to a particular show? And the example he gave was, could I, for example, subscribe to Big Brother through, say, the CBS app or something like that, and then get alerted when a new app is available?
All right. So, you know, this is like the eighth time that I've read this question, and I'm still a little bit confused about what he means, because he mentions the live TV interface. So from the live TV interface, you wouldn't be able to tell the CBS app to record anything. If that's what he's asking, no, that's not the way it works. However, as James said, with Google Play Movies and TV, you can purchase specific shows like The Walking Dead and things like that, and purchase like a season of them, and you'll get access to them and get notified of new episodes as soon as they're available. So there's that, but that's not within the CBS type app. He mentioned that on other services like Hulu Plus, they offer a subscribe feature, and you'll get notified when new episodes are available there. Also, James did mention during that episode that he uses Hulu Plus a ton. With other apps, it's kind of just up in the air. But I mean, from my usage with the NVIDIA Shield and stuff, these apps aren't that different than the apps that you're seeing on all of the other platforms. So most likely, if you've used a CBS app or something like that on a Roku or an Apple TV or something like that, and they've had this type of feature, you've probably got it on Android. But frankly, I haven't seen that type of feature on very many apps from services like CBS and USA and things like that, because that's just not how they typically work. You're going to see more of that type of functionality from a Hulu Plus, certainly from Google Play and Netflix and things like that.
All right. Next question. Does it allow for profiles so my content, my shows, don't get mixed up with the kids' stuff?
So right now, no. Android N, the next version of Android, is going to be coming to Android TV soon. And apparently that will be bringing multiple Google account support to Android TV devices. But the individual apps are also going to need to have support for that. And to do that, you would have to be using multiple Google accounts. So do you have a Google account and your kids have a Google account and your stuff is only in your account and their stuff is only in their account? You would probably need to have it set up that way for this to do exactly what it is that you're looking for. And
yikes,
most people aren't doing it that way.
Yeah.
What James says is what most people end up doing is, you know, there's a lot of multi-Android device households. Like, you know, now I am one of them. Jen and I both have our own Android phones and we both have our own Google accounts, of course. He says what most people do is they create another Google account that's the family Google account. And that's where they purchase all of their videos and music and things like that. Because on phones and tablets, it's really easy to just add another Google account as a secondary account and access all of that content from that account. This is a great idea. I hadn't actually thought of doing this yet, but I also haven't really purchased much from Google in terms of media and things like that. So it's an interesting way of doing it, but it doesn't exactly solve the problem that Tim is looking for there.
Yeah, it's an interesting solution. And I guess the thing that I would worry about is account switching as bad on these devices as it is even in a browser? I mean, I still have problems switching between Google accounts in a browser.
Yeah, that's true. And I have not added multiple accounts to my Android TV yet. And while I have multiple Google accounts set up on my Android phone, it's pretty much just for email and stuff, which, you know, obviously the email clients are built to handle that really well, but I have no idea how they would handle it from the media perspective. So I don't know. It's an option, but it definitely doesn't give him what he's actually looking for. What I think he's actually looking for, though, is really in the next question.
Right. And actually, I want to just quickly throw in here, James is adding in the chat that what they really need is user profiles, not necessarily separate user accounts. So that's an interesting way of looking at things. All right. The next question was, does it have any parental controls so kids can't access things that we feel they shouldn't?
Ah, another very important question. He says that each app can include parental controls, and some of them do, like Sling TV, but there isn't anything that's actually for parental controls at a system level. They do have an option called restricted profile. It works. It's not great. So the way the restricted profile thing works is you go into settings and you say, I want to enable restricted profile. And then from there, you basically get to pick what apps are available when running under restricted profile mode. So you would boot the thing up or switch to restricted profile mode. And on your home screen, you just only have shortcuts for the apps that you would have access to in, you know, that you defined under restricted profile. Then if you want to get to other apps, you have to fully leave that restricted profile by putting in a PIN. And then everything is available again. And if you want to leave it for your kids to, you know, to use by themselves, you'd have to switch back into restricted profile mode. The restricted profile mode is not a very good solution. It's not one that I would really want to use. So you are basically limited to what the individual apps are doing. So maybe you just don't want to have the YouTube app available on your Android TV right now, if you're concerned about kids watching things they shouldn't watch.
Yeah, that's a shame. You know what Google's really bad at? User experience.
Yeah. I mean, they've definitely gotten a lot better at it over the years. But you know, this isn't a device or device type or, you know, device family that they've been doing for a long time. I mean, they've been making...
Oh, come on.
Well,
Google TV
really...
was 4 or 5 years ago. This is,
was it really that long ago?
Yes. This is through multiple generations of trying to come up with a TV product. And you know why I didn't like Google TV? because Google's really bad at UX.
Well, and they were bad at it, so they bought another company. I don't know if you remember this. The Google TV stuff was built largely on Sage TV, and Sage TV had terrible UI.
And even worse yet, it was built on Flash.
Yikes. So, like, I think that the overall Android TV user interface and user experience is pretty good. It's not like the prettiest thing that I've ever seen, but it's good enough. It's absolutely good enough. You know, it still boils down to what we're used to seeing on these types of devices, where it's hop into an app, hop out of an app, hop into an app, hop out of an app. So, you know, it really comes down to the individual apps too, but they definitely have a long way to go in really tying all of those things together for things like parental control and multi-users and all that sort of stuff. But like, how does, you know, does Apple TV have multi-user profile stuff?
They don't have multi-user profile, but they definitely have parental restrictions.
Okay. And that's built into like every app?
Yeah, I don't know how the apps tie into that. I don't honestly know how that works from a technical perspective. Yeah, I know. It's a problem that everybody's struggling with. I'm just probably unfairly biased against the Google 10-foot lean-back experience because it seems like they've redone it so many times. And I you know, this is part of UX, right? UI is one thing, but user experience is how does it affect and impact your overall experience with it? And that has to include your family for a device that's shared by everyone in a household.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So James did give us a couple of extra links to look at. He gave us a link to the Android TV Help Center and to a news article talking about Android N on the Nexus Player. So we'll, of course, have all of these links in the show notes for you guys to check out. And if you have any other questions, feel free to pass them along to us, and we'll see what we can do about getting them answered for you. So thank you to Tim for sending us that list of questions. And if you'd like to do the same, you can shoot us an email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
Or you can use the contact form on our website. All right, let's dive in because we have a lot to talk about. First story you have up here is about the new Universal Windows Platform Plex app.
Yeah, this is brand spanking new, Richard. We had mentioned a few episodes ago that this was all in beta, but that I hadn't gotten a chance to play with it because I missed the beta window.
Well, and you know what? Apparently, I didn't get a chance to play with it either, because what I was seeing was not this. What I was seeing was more recent builds of their original app that they had prior to this.
Mm.
And I'm keeping what I have.
Well, you don't really get much of an option if you have auto app updates turned on.
I'll have to go check that. I haven't turned my device on for a long time. Maybe I can quickly get in there and turn that off.
Huh, interesting. So you really dislike it. So they have changed. They've changed it pretty significantly from what it used to be on Windows 10 or on Windows, but they've changed it to be a lot more like the app on some of their other platforms. And I do think more in line with what we're seeing from common Windows 10 apps. And by that, I mean, it's got a hamburger menu and a navigation pane on the left-hand side.
And it's a vertical scroller. And in my opinion, the overall look and layout and appeal of this is just kind of uninteresting and lacking. It looks like every other video app out there. It looks like Plex's own web app. It doesn't have the visual interest and the call-outs that kind of visual differentiation and content affords like their old app does. In my opinion, this is just an uninteresting update. But, you know, maybe it is interesting because apparently they're supporting all kinds of crazy stuff like Cortana and Continuum and HoloLens. And actually, the HoloLens support is pretty amusing because all it really does is put the big screen up in front of you. Okay.
What else would you expect?
Well, but it's the app screen. It is just it. You have your app, and it's floating in front of you right. in space. It doesn't seem like they've done much to try and customize that.
Probably
solution,
not. But and they shouldn't waste any time.
Hopefully, they will get a chance to once there's a product out there.
I guess. So you know, I don't have the same strong feelings about this app that you do. I think it's fine. There's some nice things that they've added, some things that they've taken away. And I wonder if there's just some things that they're still working on. So like they've kind of scaled back what you're used to getting on the home screen. You get a nice big giant view of what you were watching so that you can continue watching that. And you get a big list of recently added movies. You don't get anything else, you know, like on the Xbox One. We're used to having a few different sections of content that you might want to watch. And this is just, what did you watch last? And what are the most recent things you added to your library? Which really isn't a lot to choose from. Everything else, you've got to go through the main menu on the left-hand side.
Right. And I think the question that I would have is, if this is designed right now for desktop, and it clearly is desktop and tablet, then if this ultimately makes its way to the Xbox, and why wouldn't it, are we still going to have to deal with a hamburger menu in an app on the Xbox? Because, wow, do I hate that idea.
I'm not sure that I actually think that this hamburger menu would be a better experience than what the current Xbox One app has. Because it is actually faster to get back to, you know, one of the main navigation sections than it is on the current app. Because, you know, if I'm in a giant library and I'm scrolled over to R, you know, movies that start with R, and I want to switch back, that can kind of take a lot of scrolling. Whereas this, because it's scrolling vertically and stuff like that, it's just not as bad. And theoretically, that hamburger menu button that's on the Xbox controller and on the Xbox media remote would just take you over to the menu option here. So that would be kind of nice, actually, right?
I'm probably looking at this unfairly because it has a hamburger menu.
Because of your deep disdain for the hamburger menu.
One of my banks just redesigned their online card and payment site. And their website just adopted the hamburger menu for main navigation. And I just did a little bit of a facepalm when I saw that. Because I'm like, come on, don't you know that's not cool anymore? Because Microsoft's doing it now.
So that's how we determine user interfaces that aren't cool? What about
Absolutely.
Media Center?
Yeah, but those days are long gone. The forces behind that user experience are no longer involved.
I don't hate this. I think it works pretty well. And one of the more important things is it does work really well with a keyboard. And in their settings, they actually call out the fact that it has support for keyboard and remote control. So if you've got a Windows 10 home theater PC, this app might work pretty well for it. I haven't actually grabbed a remote control to use with this app, but remote controls just emulate the arrow keys on the keyboard anyway. So I have used my keyboard a bunch with this app, and I think it's pretty decent. So
yeah, that's really great to hear. I'm glad that they're doing the remote support. I mean, that's so critical on something like this, particularly if it's the kind of app that you're going to just run full screen and potentially turn your computer into home theater PC with.
Yep. So like we mentioned in the beginning, for most of you who have app updates turned on by default, you don't have a choice. You're going to be getting this soon anyway if you already have the Plex app. So look for that on your Windows 10 PCs and on your mobile phone soon, but no date given for that. All right, so let's move on to some audio news. We've been discussing Groove Music a lot lately. That's an app that's been getting a lot of love for Microsoft as we get closer to the anniversary release of Windows 10, and all of those features that we've been discussing of late, like Your Groove and things like that, they've all only been available to Windows insiders running insider preview versions of Windows 10. Well, that's not true anymore. If you're not running an insider preview, you can now get the latest version of Groove that has those new features. So go in and grab that now, because it is, you know, the Groove Music is an app that has seen so many updates and improvements over the last year or two. And it's a good music player. Like, is it, you know, it's not going to replace Spotify necessarily for some use cases, but in terms of just playing your music, it's a pretty darn good music player.
So what are those use cases? I mean, we've talked about the features that they've been adding, and it seems like they're really bringing things up to par. So is it really just a matter of the music library at this point?
It is. I mean, the app is basically just about your music library. It's, you know, with the addition of things like Your Groove and bringing the Explore view to the app, you know, it has a lot more music discovery options. Because that Your Groove feature that builds custom playlists for you based on your music collection also does include music that you don't have if you have a Groove Music Pass. So right, they've basically just been adding in a lot more music discovery stuff, but the actual store functionality is still only inside of the Windows Store app itself.
Got it. Okay. All right. But you have the ability to stream songs that are available through Microsoft, right?
Correct. Yep. Absolutely.
Well, that's pretty cool. So then I guess the other thing that we had up here was that the UWP app for this is very likely going to end up replacing Groove Music that exists on your Xbox One right now. It looks like they're really just expanding this platform, or this app, to cover all platforms.
Which, frankly, that can't come soon enough. Because Groove Music on Xbox One is pretty terrible. It's so slow. It's not an enjoyable user experience at all. I can't wait to have this on my Xbox One.
So do we know when we're expecting this? Is this something that is going to happen in the short term?
You know, I would have said it's probably going to be available with the anniversary update on August 2nd, but it's still not available on the Xbox One, even in preview mode. And we've been getting, as we'll mention in a little bit, tons of updates for preview builds on the Xbox One, and it's still not there. I double checked. It's still not there. So maybe it won't be ready in time for the anniversary update, but that really surprises me, because it's not like Groove as a UWP is a new thing, and we've been seeing more and more UWP apps make their way to the Xbox One over the last month. It seems like this would have been one of the very first things to become available.
Yeah, you would think.
So I don't know. We'll see. I'm still hoping for it to be available by the anniversary update launch, but if not, I have to imagine it's going to be very, very shortly thereafter. So there's only one downside to this, though. The Xbox One app that we currently have has one cool feature that the desktop UWP app doesn't. And that is, if you have a Groove Music Pass subscription and you're listening to music that has a music video, you can enable it to play the music video instead of just the song, which is a really cool feature. And it's not in the UWP, so we might lose it when we get the UWP on Xbox One. And maybe that's the reason for the delay. Maybe they're working on that feature.
Here, look, we're giving you a brand new version of this application, and it's less capable than the other. No, that's not really fair. I mean, hopefully they'll get that worked out. And if not, it's something that I wonder, just how many people actually use that feature.
Well, considering it only works for those that have a Groove Music Pass subscription, I'm going to guess not very many. All right. So one more brief little bit of info for Groove, and that is that they've finally updated Groove Music for iOS and Android. I think it's been over a year since they've updated this app on either platform. So while we mentioned earlier that they've made tons of changes to this app and improvements over the last year or more to Windows and Windows Phone, there's been nothing on iOS and Android until now. I don't have any experience with what this app looked like on Android before this version, but this new version, it's pretty decent. Apparently, it's way faster than what it used to be. The library syncing is pretty fast. It logs in really fast. Again, I don't have a reference point here, but when I loaded this on my Android device, I wasn't concerned that the app was going too slowly. Performance wasn't an issue for me at all with this device. So, or with this release, it works really well. It doesn't actually have your Groove support yet, but what it does do is if you like a particular Your Groove playlist that you've found while using Groove Music on a PC, you can save that playlist and it syncs those playlists just like every other type of playlist across all of your devices.
Nice.
So that you can access them on your Android or iOS device if you've saved them.
Nice. It's like we've almost gotten back to that day when you created playlists in Media Player and they also worked in Media Center.
Oh, those are the days, weren't they? I remember doing that like 7 years ago.
Exactly.
And most of my playlists are still the same ones and I still don't use them. Yeah. Hey, Richard.
What's that?
You think the people that are listening to this like this show?
Well, I hope they do. Otherwise, why are they listening?
And why are they listening this far into the show if they don't?
That's a really good question.
Well, even if they don't like the show, well, maybe not. If you do like the show, there's one thing that you could do for us to really help us out. Head on over to iTunes and give us a rating or a review. Reviews really help. And we'd really, really appreciate it. So take a couple moments, head on over to iTunes, drop us a rating.
Da-na-na-na.
All right, let's move on to some gaming news, Richard. Your favorite part of the show.
Absolutely. Hey, I even added to this section.
You did, sort of. I mean, it's kind of a weak submission, but sure. So this is one of those areas where the news kind of went crazy this week, although not entirely directly. So let's start with the preview updates. I mentioned a little bit earlier that we've gotten a lot of preview updates. Richard, have you been in any of the preview programs on Xbox One?
No.
Okay.
Phone only.
So for those of you who have or maybe you haven't been in Xbox preview programs in the past, before it was like, you might get an update once or twice a month, maybe. And then actually around the beginning of this year, it slowed down a lot. And we went a couple of months without any updates. This last week, we had 6 updates in 1 week. It's gotten kind of ridiculous, but
is that multiples a day or just kind of like every day there was an update?
It was basically every day there was an update. Wow. Yeah, it's a little ludicrous at that rate, but okay. So are they fixing things? Yes. Most of it's been little things. But there was one update. I think this was last Tuesday. This was the biggest update. And when I told Jen about this update, she was thrilled. It made her day when I told her about this update. They added an option in the settings to disable Cortana and go back to the old Xbox commands with the Kinect.
Oh, come on.
I'm normally not in favor of disabling new features in a preview update. Your whole job.
But if it makes the family happy.
Well, right. That's really what it came down to. Like, my family hated the new voice stuff. Like, they went from using voice for everything to bumbling around with the remote. And like, my daughter, she's 8. She still doesn't, like, because the Xbox voice stuff has been good enough, she still isn't great with using remotes to get around and switch between apps and all this stuff because she didn't have to be. And all of a sudden, she had to be.
Oh, no. Josh, we're going to grow up with a generation of people who don't know how to use a remote control.
Well, should they have to use a remote control?
What's a D-pad?
No, I mean, she knows how to use the remote control just fine within the apps. But in terms of navigating around between like the TV interface and Netflix, and maybe she wants to get to PBS Kids or something like that, I don't think she really knows how to do that.
So what is it that they didn't like about Cortana? Is it it was a different vernacular, or was it that Cortana wasn't as reliable? Because I've read that over the last couple of weeks, it's been getting better and better.
It was all of that and more. The Cortana interface didn't do a good job of understanding what they were saying. It takes longer to say the things because there's, you know, hey, you know, the phrase for accessing Cortana is different than the phrase for accessing just the Xbox stuff, and it's longer. So it's longer and frequently doesn't understand you and takes a lot longer to recognize anyway, and then takes a lot longer to respond once it has understood. I mean, you use your voice to turn your Xbox on and off at least, right?
I do. I don't use it for a whole lot of navigation because I get frustrated that I have to know the exact phrases or be looking at the screen to see the little green letters that I need to speak. It should be easier than that. So I've been really looking forward to this. I want to see how this works when it comes out. I'll bet I'll end up using voice more.
And that may be true for us too, once the issues are ironed out. But like, if you wanted to use your voice to turn off your Xbox, how long do you think that process takes?
It takes like 4 or 5 seconds.
3 seconds. 3 seconds, 4 seconds. With Cortana, it was like 15.
What?
Yes. Because you'd have to say the longer phrase to initiate it. She would warm up or whatever, then figure out what it was that you said, display that, then give you the option to say yes or no. And then you'd say yes. Or, like, it was dramatically longer just to turn the Xbox off with your voice.
That's really interesting. And it's kind of intriguing to think, is this a trade-off between just voice response and true AI? And are people willing to put up with that trade-off?
And I'm also not sure that there's more AI to it, because I don't I should probably re-enable it to test, but I don't think you could say different things to get it to turn off your Xbox. You still had to say the same phrase, just with the Cortana version of it instead of the Xbox version of it. And then it's yes or no. Like I always wanted to say yep, not yes. And you can't say yep with the Xbox commands. And I doubt you can with Cortana either. You know, just little things like that. So
you should be able to. I know Siri has the same problem, and they're trying to fix that, because that's been one of the annoyance factors, is that it still requires a very specific vocabulary.
Right. So if they get that figured out, then, and dramatically increase the performance of it, then cool, it'll be good again. But yeah, right now I couldn't do it anymore. My family couldn't deal with it anymore.
Yeah, I get it. Now, isn't this also supposed to finally add the background audio too?
It does. And they've actually started to add this in via these preview updates. Now, I don't know that they actually announced that or if it was even in any of the change logs, but it's there. It's just hard to find because there aren't many apps that actually support it. Like that terrible Groove Music app doesn't support it yet. When I heard that it was in there, I went kind of looking through my list of apps to see what might support it, and tried Groove and it didn't, and really couldn't think of anything else to try. But then, you know, I was surfing around on Reddit like I normally do and saw a post on there that mentioned that there's an app called Cast that was available as a UWP on the Xbox One in the store. Cast is one of the apps that I was using, and I think it's the one that I settled on while I was still using Windows Phone. That was the app that I was using for listening to podcasts. So I went to the store, searched for Cast, C-A-S-T, and sure enough, it was there. And sure enough, it installed and ran. Now, it doesn't run well. It seems like the developer, who's actually a Microsoft employee, I'm pretty sure, just pushed it out without doing anything to actually improve the experience on an Xbox. Like, nothing. So you launch the app and you just get the big on-screen cursor like you do when you're using Edge on your Xbox One.
Very nice. This is a Microsoft app?
It's not a Microsoft app, but I believe it's a Microsoft developer who made the app like in his spare time.
Okay.
It's very clearly not ready to be used on an Xbox One, but it's there. And while I was playing around with it, I discovered that app does support the background audio stuff.
So I'm going to make a prediction, Josh. I'll bet that the current Groove app will never support background audio. And the only way that you're going to be able to support background audio as an app developer is to deploy a UWP app.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid guess, in my opinion. Yep. The way that it works is probably about how you would expect. Basically, once you're using an app that supports background audio, if you double tap the Xbox button or, you know, go home and then move over to the left to bring up the side menu that has quick access to your friends and achievements and party settings. And then at the very bottom is settings and snap options. Down at the bottom of that will appear a section for displaying playback controls. And when you go down to that section, then at the top is displayed what you're listening to, and then simple play, pause, fast forward, rewind buttons.
Wait, so I'm confused. The options for playing it back are at the bottom of this list, or the option to turn the controls on are at the bottom and they appear at the top?
There isn't really an option to turn background audio on or off. If the app supports it, it just starts doing it. And if you switch out of the app, instead of the music stopping, it keeps going. And if you want to control it from that point, then you have to go to the settings section. And like, you know how if you want to get to friends, you go over into that menu and then you have to go down.
And then you have to go down, down, down and select the things that you want.
Right.
So this is the last thing in that list. This is all the way at the bottom?
Correct. It is at the bottom, but it's not like that list has 50 things in it.
Well, I know, but it's like 7. So it means, or 5 or whatever it is. So it means that every time you go to maybe pause something or skip ahead, that's, wow. Okay. All right.
It might be a lot. It's also still early. It's not done yet.
Yep. Yep. I'm reserving judgment. It's early. But yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, so that stuff that's coming out eventually, coming out perhaps more soon, is the new Xbox One. The one that I said, yeah, heck yeah, I'm getting that.
You're getting it real soon then, right? Because it's finally coming on August 2nd. Richard, that's like 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I know. I think I talked myself out of that craziness.
Why did you talk yourself out of it? I mean, it's 4K video. It's HDR. It's right. A UHD Blu-ray player.
Exactly.
Why would you talk yourself out of that?
Remember when you reminded me that I don't have a 4K TV yet, which is 100% true, and that otherwise this doesn't really offer any other benefit for me. So why would I do this now? And more importantly, I was thinking, what the heck do I do with my old Xbox One? I have now more Xboxes than rooms to put them in.
You could put it in the kitchen.
I have an extender.
But it doesn't play games.
That is correct.
But neither do you.
Neither do I, and the likelihood of anyone playing a game in the kitchen is really, really small.
Gaming over breakfast.
Yeah, no. Anyway, it's good that this is coming out. This is coming perhaps faster than we thought when we first heard the announcement about this thing. But the first one that they're coming out with is really the biggest one, the 2 terabyte model. That kind of surprised me.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times when manufacturers are coming out with multiple versions of a product, multiple SKUs, oftentimes they hit with the least common denominator first because it's going to make the biggest splash. And they'll get holdouts in the people that want the more expensive model, but they're just throwing the more expensive one right out there. And I wonder if that's actually ultimately going to get less traffic.
Well, I wonder if the idea is we know we're going to get some people who just want the new one. So let's make them buy the most expensive one. If they want it now, they have to buy the most expensive one.
And that's how you kind of counterbalance the race to the bottom in pricing, I guess.
Maybe. Doesn't seem like a bad option. So that's the 2 terabyte model, and that's going to be $400, which is still 4 times the storage and $100 less right. than the Xbox ones that you and I bought almost 3 years ago.
Well, $100 less because it doesn't have the Kinect, right?
Right. That's true. So no Kinect, $400, all those other things that we talked about. Comes on the second. Comes with that new controller, which also has Bluetooth built in if you want to pair that controller with a Windows 10 PC. That's cool. There will be 500 gig and 1 terabyte options, which will be $299 and $349, but we still don't have dates on those yet. So that wasn't even the only Xbox One console they announced this week. There's another one. They're doing a limited edition Gears of War 4 bundle. This one also has a 2 terabyte hard drive, but the main thing here is that it looks very different. It's still the same shape and all that stuff, but instead of being boring white, it looks like it's covered in blood and ripped to pieces. Doesn't that sound awesome?
I actually kind of love this, particularly since I hate the look of the new Xbox One S. So yeah, anything for it not to be stark white, I'm all over that.
So when you said you weren't going to get an Xbox One S, what you really meant was you're holding out to get the Gears of War 4 Xbox One S.
Yeah, no, what I'm probably holding out for is the black version.
or a Scorpio.
Yeah, well, maybe. Or perhaps if they come out with, I don't know if they would or not, but a Halo version. The Halo versions are usually pretty cool looking.
Yeah, that's true. They probably will. I mean, they had a Halo version. They had a Sunset Overdrive version. They had a Forza version. So they're going to make other versions of this for sure. Anyway, again, this one's the 2 terabyte model. It comes with the crazy design. It's got a crazy newly designed controller and the ultimate edition of Gears of War 4, which is regularly $100. All of that for $450. Pre-orders start August 1st. Start shipping in mid-September. I don't know what the date. They haven't said the date. They just said mid-September. I don't know why they're being coy about that. But mid-September, when you actually get it. They've also got another controller design that they're releasing. If you just want to buy these crazy Gears of War themed controllers, they're going to be $75 each. So $15 premium for fancy Gears of War 4 controller. But I think it also might have some other Gears of War themed stuff that it comes with. So there you go. Then we normally wrap up by talking about the deals with gold and then the latest free games on the Xbox One. Well, the deals with gold this week are pretty terrible. The only one really worth mentioning might be NHL 16 is $10, but that game has been on sale a ton, which is really the case with all of these games. They're either terrible or they've been on sale a billion times before, so you probably already have it. It is the second half of the month, though, so there are new free games.
Right, and what did you call it? Lame or minor update to this section was with regard to that, because I'm excited about this one, and I already downloaded Tron Evolution.
Did you play it?
I haven't played it, but I downloaded it today, and it is available on the Xbox only through the last half of this month. This is the July 15th to 31st offering on the Xbox 360, and on the Xbox One, now through the middle, because that makes sense, of August, you can download Tumblestone. That's not something I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I don't think it's something that anybody's familiar with. It's a small puzzle game. Huh. It looks like Candy Crush to me.
All right. Well, I am excited about Tron, and I actually do expect to play this. So maybe next week.
All right, we want a full review, Richard.
I'm not playing it through.
Why not? You already think it's going to be such a terrible game that you're not going to play the whole thing?
No, it's just that I won't have that much attention for it.
You and me alike, my friend. All right, so that's it for our gaming news. Why don't we jump into some mobile news? We got two new Windows phones to talk about here. Although, it's not like either of them are brand new to any of our listeners. It's just that one of them is available now. Yeah, a new Windows phone available now. And one coming soon. So the one that's available is the Acer Liquid Jade Primo, which I still think is one of the best / most hilarious names for a phone ever. I do love it. This phone is now available at Microsoft stores. It's $650. It straddles that like upper mid-range line of phones, but it is Continuum ready. So this is a $650 phone. But that price does include the phone and a Continuum dock and a keyboard and mouse, which that could be cool. In terms of specs, this thing's got a Snapdragon 808, which is a decent processor, but you know it's not like the 820. 3 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage on board. It's also expandable. The display is a little bit mid-range-ish too. It's a 5.5-inch only 1080p display. But maybe that's a good thing because it's got a kind of a small battery for being this big of a phone. It's only got a 2800 milliamp hour battery. So I don't know. I don't know who this phone is for. Partly because it's Windows Phone and because it's not super high end, but it's still pretty expensive.
Yeah. When did a 1080p screen become meh?
I don't know, 2 years ago?
Really?
Maybe.
I guess maybe for the size. I don't know. The other question that I had is, when this comes with a Continuum-ready kit and a Continuum dock, what does that mean? Is there a standard Continuum dock and all Windows phones can connect to it through some standard connector? Or does every one of these manufacturers, if they want their product to be Continuum capable, have to come out with their own dock?
So far, all of them have made their own docks. Although, I wonder if you even need the dock. Because the dock is just a little plastic puck that has a USB-C port sticking out of it. And I wonder if you could just plug the USB-C cable in. Oh, no, that wouldn't work. Because it's USB-C to your phone. And USB-C to the dock for power, but then HDMI out for connecting to your monitor. And then it's got USB ports on it for your keyboard and mouse, maybe.
Right, but if so is the Microsoft dock, then why is everybody else creating their own dock? I just don't get that.
Well, because they're custom shaped to that specific phone so that it fits in there more snugly, so that it's not just being supported vertically by the USB-C port.
Yeah, I suppose. It could also be planned obsolescence. Well, because it makes it sticky, right? You end up having these accessories that are part of that ecosystem. And if you end up having to or deciding to buy someone else's phone, then your dock is useless and you throw it out. That annoys me.
All right. Well, that makes sense.
Hey, that annoys me. I think I'll take to Twitter.
that's what it's there for, right?
At least one of my voices.
If the Liquid Jade Primo doesn't exactly float your boat, maybe the HP Elite X3 will. And frankly, it almost definitely will, because this phone is pretty spectacular. We've been raving about this one since they first announced it back at, was it at CES? Or was it even before that?
I don't remember when it was, but man, do I love this, except I'm not so excited about the price, but you know, we can talk about that.
Yeah. So the price is kind of a lot. I guess let's just start there because we mostly know the specs, although we'll go over those in a second. this phone, just the phone, is $699. Just the phone.
$699. That is more than I paid for my first iPhone.
Yes, but it's probably less than what you paid for your current iPhone.
Well, I'm still on a 2-year plan, so that'll end soon. I know everything's different now. We're out of the world of contracts, and that's good, but it does mean the phones are more expensive.
Well, the phones aren't really more expensive. You just have to buy them up front or whatever. But anyway, so it's $699 for the phone. But this is a phone that's really built around the idea of Continuum. So they've got a dock also. So for $799, you also get the dock and a headset, which, whatever. We know the date. It's August 29th. We also know that they've teased a laptop dock for this thing too. And if you go to the product page for this phone on the HP website, they feature this laptop dock, although they don't say the price and they don't have the date for that. But the idea behind this phone is that it is so powerful and Continuum is such a cool feature that it's a phone that can completely replace your computer. And for some people, you know, we've talked a lot about Continuum. For some people, especially business users, that's a possibility. It's a real possibility, because if your job has you spending 100% of your time in Outlook and your calendar and Word and Excel and a web browser, this phone will do all of that, and it'll do it all pretty well. So this actually does kind of make sense. Now, let's get back to the price a little bit. It's a lot of money, but it is a very high-end phone. And I think what's probably more important here is this is a phone that is meant to be sold to enterprises. Enterprises
in bulk.
Yeah, enterprises who are going to buy a whole bunch of them at once, give them to like their entire sales force or something like that. And if they're going to buy 1,000 of these, they're not going to pay $700 a phone.
Do you think that's true? I mean, will HP still kind of follow that pricing model? Because if, say, that same company were to buy phones from Apple, they wouldn't get any discount for buying 1,000 of them.
Really?
As far as I understand, you still pretty much pay very close to the regular price if you're buying in bulk.
Well, Apple and the enterprise have not exactly always been, you know, great partners.
Best buddies?
Yeah, that'd be one way to put it. So whereas HP, like the enterprise, that's their bread and butter.
That's true.
And I'm sure they'll be bundling this with other services and, you know, other things that they're doing. So yeah, I do think they'll get a bulk discount. Like, are they going to be paying $250 for each phone? No, I doubt it. But I bet it's going to be a fairly significant discount if they're buying a whole bunch of them. So let's just really quickly dig into the specs here, because we haven't actually talked about the specs in a long time. And when I reread through them tonight, I was again blown away by the specs on this thing. So it's a 5.96 inch, which, come on, it's 6 inches, QHD display. So that's 2560 by 1440. It's got a 2.5 gigahertz Snapdragon 820, which is essentially the same processor in the Galaxy S7, which is crazy fast. It's got 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage on board, plus micro SD. For an enterprise phone, it sounds like it's still got a pretty great camera, a 16 megapixel camera on the back, an 8 megapixel camera on the front for all of your enterprise selfies, and then a giant battery too, a 4150 milliamp hour battery. It's not removable, but it's gigantic. I can't think of a phone that has a battery that's that big in it.
And don't forget, for some reason, a Bang & Olufsen audio processing system.
Right. You know, for all of your
office jams.
Company disco parties.
Yep.
There we go. That must be what it's for. Happens all the time. I don't know. Like, if I still wanted to have a Windows phone, this would be the one that I would want. But I you know, I didn't see anything that said how you would be able to buy this if you were outside of a corporation. So you might not be able to.
Which is a shame, because if there are any diehard Windows Phone fans who are willing to spend the money for it, I would bet that this is the device they'd be interested in buying.
Yeah, because, I mean, it blows away the 950 XL.
Yeah, this is the flagship that, frankly, we've all been waiting for from Microsoft, and they never delivered.
Right. This is what the 950 XL should have been, and it just isn't. So that's unfortunate, but it's also not like this device would have saved the platform.
What? It just needed that one more good phone. Come on.
So there's one more thing that we've been talking about a lot with Windows Mobile and the Windows 10 anniversary update coming out soon. And that is messaging everywhere and the continuing, revolving door of where to get your messaging.
Saga?
Yeah, exactly. the last we talked, it was that messaging everywhere was getting yanked from Windows 10, that it wouldn't be part of the anniversary update, that they weren't going to use the messaging app for that anymore, and instead they would be moving all of this functionality into the Skype app. Well, we've got a new version of the Skype app. It's a UWP, and it's for the anniversary update, and it still doesn't have messaging everywhere, but it's coming. So this app is available now in preview for Windows Insiders on PC. But by the time the anniversary update comes out, it's going to be ready. It's going to be on Windows 10 PCs and phones. And then they're saying later this summer, which by the time the anniversary update comes out, they'll have about a month and a half left of summer to deliver actual messaging everywhere functionality inside of the Skype app. So they must be very, very close to getting this into the Skype app. And then once they do that, it'll support Windows Phone and Android for, and just to remind everybody, messaging everywhere is the ability to send and receive, you know, basically sync up all of your text message notifications between your phone and a PC.
And this timeline really suggests that they had technical difficulties with this particular feature. If that's true, I'm glad they're holding it back and not delivering something that's going to be a buggy mess.
Yep, absolutely. I'd much rather have it work than not be good and have it early.
All right, so that's the end of the good news in our mobile section.
Yeah. I debated whether or not I should include this, but I kind of feel like it's worth pointing out that there are other reasons, there are other indicators that Windows Phone really is dying. And the main indicators are, you know, apps and what apps we're getting, which is not really any new ones within the last week or so, and what apps we're losing. And the two big ones that I saw over the last week that were announced to be leaving the platform, Angry Birds, all gone. Like they're not going to be releasing any more Angry Birds games or any more updates to the Angry Birds games on Windows Phone. And Kayak, which is a pretty decent travel tool for booking flights and hotels and all that stuff, that's also leaving Windows Phone.
And that's the one that's really kind of flooring me, because that is an enterprise tool.
Right. It absolutely is. Yeah.
You could make your argument, perhaps, that people might still be playing Angry Birds while sitting in the airport waiting for the plane they now can't find. But seriously, I mean, Kayak is something that I use all the time in business to figure out where my incoming plane is and see what my various options are for flights out. So I'm very surprised that they're pulling support for this. And I wouldn't be surprised if they end up changing their mind on this, if ultimately they do create a UWP app at some point.
Yeah, I agree. The Angry Birds thing, I don't know if Angry Birds is still all that popular, but if you're a Windows Phone user, you know, at least you could play Angry Birds, because it's not like you were playing Pokemon Go.
with the rest of the world.
Exactly. Except for you, right? Because you're not playing? Or
I'm
are
not
you
playing?
Now? Yeah, I didn't think
I'm
so.
Not playing. But it was funny, you know, last week I was traveling, and on Wednesday night, I was out with some of my colleagues, and we're sitting in this bar that has windows out to the street, and you could just see in downtown Des Moines, which is a downtown that is usually dead at night. Dead, dead, dead. And there were groups of people walking around staring at their phones. It was crazy. It was like something out of a horror film. They'd all been somehow brainwashed.
All right. Well, I'm sure that people are getting inundated with Pokemon stuff on every other podcast and blog and newspaper and TV show that they're watching. So we'll move on to that. And instead, Richard, what's going on in your entertainment center?
So I've been watching and catching up and 2 weeks of updates here. So if this seems excessive, remember, this is 2 weeks of viewing, including some flights. So the Royal Pains finale was about 2 weeks ago, actually. And I'm really sorry to see that show go. I think the finale didn't live up to the show itself, but they wrapped things up pretty well, I guess. And, you know, something big started. Mr. Robot started.
It did.
And did you happen to catch the sneak that they did on Sunday night on social media?
No, I didn't.
So I was out at dinner and I saw something on Twitter. Like, ah, I got to get back to my hotel. Finished up dinner, went back to the hotel. By the time I got back to the hotel, I was only able to see everything up to the titles, and then it stopped. Because they literally took it off the internet. They took the files off the internet. They took the tweets down. No sign of it, as if it had never existed. So clever. Such clever, appropriate marketing for Mr. Robot.
Yeah, to give absolutely free access to their hit show for just a couple of hours before it was available on TV.
Yeah, loved it. Loved it. So I did end up watching it later in the week, and I watched both parts of the premiere, and wow, it comes on strong, and the second half is quite powerful and kind of pulls it all together, because in the first half, I'm like, what's going on? I don't know how I feel about this, but by the time I got to the second half, I thought they really did it well. And I don't recall actually watching any commercials, so I'm wondering if maybe there's a chance that they somehow did it with just preceding or trailing commercials, because I honestly don't remember commercials during the whole show. Very weird.
I think there were commercials in my recording. I think.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, the new season of Tyrant already started. That looks like it's going to be pretty good again. I completely caught up on Nashville, and that is now off of ABC. That is going to the Country Music Channel, whose name I can't remember, but you know for some reason. And I am now trying to catch up on Hawaii Five-0, because I kind of stopped watching that at the beginning of the season because there were things that were more interesting to me. But it's a show that I like. It's kind of a, you know, good procedural cop drama. So I enjoy that. And there's lots of eye candy in that too. You know, the scenery, the people, everything, the Windows phones, it's all eye candy. And then I found that there was a special from the Sherlock series that apparently was available at the beginning of the year, and somehow I missed it. And I had watched all of the previous Sherlock stuff, but didn't know that this one was out. So we ended up watching that over the weekend and enjoyed that. It was weird. It was a little revealing. Brought some stuff up that I don't quite remember from the past, but that was pretty cool. Still watching Big Brother, of course. And here's a new one. I have wanted to watch Sports Night for so many years. This is I want to call it a sitcom. I don't know if it really falls into the sitcom category because it is kind of weird, but it's an Aaron Sorkin piece, and it preceded all of the other stuff that we know Aaron Sorkin for. It's been highly, highly rated. Everybody who watched it told me I have to see it. Everybody, every single person who watched it told me I have to see it.
So and this now, was pre-West Wing?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That explains why I've never even heard of it.
Yes. And you know, it has Peter Krause, who looks like he's, I don't know, maybe 24 or something. And the guy that played, I can't even remember his name now, but it has one of the characters that ultimately was in The West Wing. So it's really good. The writing is fantastic. It is a sitcom, but it almost always has a poignant moment or poignant theme for the episode. And I am very impressed with what I've seen so far. I've watched about 5 or 6 episodes. And where, you might ask, where am I watching this?
Where are you watching this?
I am watching this on the refreshed ABC app that is now on my Apple TV, and it's also on my iDevices. And the cool thing about the ABC app that they just put out is that, unlike what CBS is doing, where they're trying to get you to pay $6 a month for their programming that everybody else is giving away, ABC is in fact allowing you to stream all of their content that they have online at no cost. The cost is commercial breaks, and you have to deal with them, but they're not crazy. It's like 5 or 6 commercials in 2 or 3 breaks throughout the course of the show. So it's not anything worse than what you'd normally see on TV. I'm really impressed with what they've done. This is a part of their throwback section, and their throwback section has what seems like, I don't know, 40 or 50 old ABC series that you can now watch in their entirety, all seasons, all episodes.
So none of pretty that cool. is available on their website then, is it?
I don't believe that all of this content is also available on the website.
Because there's no ABC app for Windows.
Yeah, there's so that.
I don't know off the top of my head if there's one for Xbox One. So
there is not.
So I probably can't watch Sports Night, is what you're telling me?
Right, because it used to be on Netflix and it isn't anymore.
Okay. Oh, well, I don't have time anyway. So the only thing that I really did have time to watch was Mr. Robot. But even that, I only got to watch the first part of episode one. And that was enough for me. Like, it was so good. It was so good. Like, for you to tell me that part two is, like, way better, wow. Because, man, that show just kept on going from where it left off last season. Wow.
Yeah, they did a good job. I didn't know where they were going to take this. And when I saw what they were doing with it, I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, this is pretty cool. But there's a shocking moment or two in the second half that I expect you will enjoy.
So did you watch the show that's on after Mr. Robot? I don't remember what they're calling it. Hacking the Robot or Talking to the Robot or...
No, I didn't.
Don't. Like,
spoilers?
No, because it comes on after the show. It's just like, it is a complete ripoff of The Talking Dead, which is the talk show that comes on after The Walking Dead. It's just way worse. Like, the host just isn't good. It's like the host can't really figure out if he wants to be funny or not and how funny he should be. And it just wasn't good. And it's not like they were holding back for the first episode, because they had the writer and executive producer. They had, I'm blanking on all of their names now, but the two main actors for Mr. Robot, was it Rami Malek and...
Rami, right.
And wow, how am I blanking on the other guy's name? Mr. Robot. They were all there.
Christian Slater.
Christian Slater, yeah. I don't know how I blank on Christian Slater, but they were all there, and it was still just not very good. The host just isn't good. Don't waste your time watching it.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's really surprising and disappointing.
Yeah, it is. So that's it for what I watched. I did play a game over the last, I guess this was probably 2 weeks ago at this point, a game called Inside, which came out on Xbox One last month, I think, and then came to PC recently. I played it on PC. This game is a game that was made by the same company that made Limbo, which was a phenomenal game back on the Xbox 360. And it's kind of similar. It's a side scroller, basically puzzly sort of stuff. Not a lot of color. It's mostly black and whitish with a little bit of color here and there. This was a really, really cool game. It's not long. I think I beat it in about 3 hours, which is about what most people have been completing it in. It was so good. It was really, really good. The puzzles aren't too difficult. It's hard to call it a narrative because there's no dialogue, there's no text, but it's absolutely telling you a story. Just by, you know, what you're doing and what you're seeing going on. And it's the type of experience that you finish and you just want to go and talk to other people who've played it to talk about, you know, what does this part mean? And what do you think was actually going on here? And it was really, really cool. So Inside is a game that I definitely recommend everybody go and check out. It is $20, which kind of seems like a lot for a three-hour game,
yeah.
But it is really good. And if you don't want to pay the $20, just it's going to eventually go on sale. And at that point, you absolutely should get it and play it because it is that good. It is a must-play game. Even if you're like, I'm not into puzzle games. I loved this game. It is absolutely must-play. And then to wrap up what I've been consuming, we mentioned James Montemagno at the beginning of the show. We should mention him at the end of the show because that guy also has a new podcast that he's doing. This is for the developers in the audience because he started a new podcast with a friend of his where they just talk about development and, you know, software development specifically and lots of the different things that go into that. They've both mostly done mobile development, but there's a lot of just, it's a lot of really good conversation. It's not super long. They try to keep them 45 minutes or less. You know, James has done a whole lot of podcasting in his life and knows how to put together a show. So they've already got 3 episodes out, I think. It's definitely worth listening to if you're into development at all. The show is called Merge Conflict. You can find it.
Awesome.
Yeah, it is a great
awesome name.
MergeConflict.fm is the website, and they're Merge Conflict FM on like everything else, all the social platforms and all that stuff. So if you're a developer, go and listen to Merge Conflict.
Very cool. Hey, before we're out of here, I just wanted to mention that once again, our favorite Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black has received the Emmy nomination for Best Actress in a Drama. And Rami Malek, who you were just mentioning from Mr. Robot, received the Emmy nomination for Best Actor in a Drama. So very cool for both of them, two actors that I think are just phenomenal in their roles. And, you know, I think I even mentioned, as I had talked about seeing the finale and watching the whole season 3 fold out of Orphan Black, just how much I'm amazed by her because I continue to forget that she plays all these roles.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool that they both got nominations for Best Actor and Actress. Very cool. Hopefully they'll win them.
Yeah, I hope so, because up against them are basically the usuals. It would be nice if someone not typically in that role gets that opportunity.
If something other than Game of Thrones won awards?
Or House of Cards, or
The Walking Dead,
Homeland, or an Amazon show. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of good stuff here, but it's nice that it's mixed up a little bit.
All right. Well, that is going to do it. I can't. I'm amazed that this show went this long. And we actually cut things out while we were recording. So, oh boy, we'll be back next week with a lot of that stuff that we didn't get to talk about this week. But if you want to talk to us about the stuff that we did cover this week, there's a lot of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're at Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google+. We've got that email address. entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We've also got another podcast for you to check out, Richard's other podcast, Home On. What's going on with Home On?
So the latest episode was the HomeKit announcements episode that I talked about previously. That's doing really well. And shortly, you should be getting a new episode that is essentially me talking with a friend of mine who just moved into a brand new house. And it's his first house that he's ever owned. And he previously wasn't terribly interested in home automation stuff. And now he's like, well, I need to get locks. I should get smart locks. And I need security. And all of this stuff that you don't think of when you don't own a home.
Right. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it was a good show. I think people enjoy it.
Cool. All right. Well, if you want to partake in the show as it's happening, you can do that while we record it, because we do this live, typically Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. We've got a chat room. We've got a live audio player for you to hear us and interact with us in the chat. It's a lot of fun for us. I think it's a lot of fun for you guys too. So come and do that Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. right at the DMZ. If you forget, it's okay. We tweet about it. So follow us on Twitter and you'll know exactly when to come and check us out. But that's going to do it for episode 375. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time for episode 376. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.